Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Champion the Gamer. A very special win episode indeed, because I have never been this excited, frankly. Tell everyone who you are, Jesse, and what you do.
Hi everyone, I'm Jesse Cox. I make videos on the internet. I podcast too much. I have opinions, and I also am a big giant goober. So that's pretty much what I do.
What I love about this is we do Champion the Gamer, right? And this is one of those things where I'm like, don't undersell yourself, please. What is it you don't do? Tell me that. Is there
Oh my
anything?
Lord.
Is there anything you don't do?
Take time for myself. Work out enough, eat right. Let's see, what else don't I do? relax. The things you probably should do.
No, because I mean, it goes without saying, I mean, some of your accolades and accomplishments, but just let us know, first of all, for those that have no idea who you are by some miracle, where you got started.
Sure. So years ago in the before times, I was just like a little nerd doing little nerdy stuff throughout the end of high school and into college. I would dabble in making videos on the internet in the form of, at the time it was like AMVs, for anyone who remembers anime music videos. Except mine weren't anime, they were just, I would take ripped scenes from video games, and I would then edit them together with music. And then eventually I just learned I liked editing. So I would go in and take things like a movie trailer and then combine it with something else and match the lip syncing just to see if I could for fun. And that was kind of like a thing that I did. And then in college, I started working at a radio station and I was like, oh man, this is fun. I like doing this too. And then that transitioned to me being like, well, maybe I could do voices or something. So I thought that would be fun. And then at some point, my parents were like, what if you got a real job? So I started getting my degree in history. So I double majored in history and theater, which is two genuinely useless degrees. And then I took those and ended up as a teacher. And in my mind, I was like, well, all right, I can keep my mom and dad happy because I'll be a teacher, but I also can, like, come up with fun lessons and entertain the kids, which is kind of the whole acting thing anyway. So I did both. And for 3 years I taught, and then in 2010 was laid off and had nothing to do. And so for the summer of that year, I just made videos on YouTube, which was a thing that I had watched a little, but not really interacted with. And I started making some for World of Warcraft just because that's what I was playing at the time. And then my dear friend Total Biscuit was like, hey, do you want to make money doing this? And I said, huh? That's a thing you can do? And he's like, yup. And so I ended up working with him to, sort of build out my channel and all my stuff. And then he was like, hey, come on my podcast. And then I ended up staying there forever. And from that point on, and the rest is history. I took that and rolled with it. I kept creating content on YouTube. I started streaming. That sort of rolled into other podcasts. All that kind of worked with me to take the money I was earning on YouTube and sort of invest that in indie games. And so I'm the producer on several indie games, and yeah, it's kind of all been from that. But all that said, that was a 20-year process, so it wasn't an overnight thing. That is not
That's
who
why I
I am.
say though, like, is there anything you can't do? Because that list is pretty damn long that you can do, isn't it?
Man, I can't play Souls-like games well. That's pretty obvious. I will say, being real on the subject, the idea of, devoting this much time to content creation, not great for relationships. It definitely is one of those things where you're like, oh no, that relationship ended because I focus more on work, like that kind of thing. There are downsides to being very like, I'm a go-getter. I'm gonna get out there, I'm gonna do stuff. You won't necessarily have time for other things. So over the years, as we moved into the post-COVID era, I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna slow down. I'm gonna dial it down a notch. But yeah, if you want to be in the content creation business, if you want to make stuff online, you gotta give it the time. Unless you're a fluke and you have 80 million followers somehow, in which case, congratulations, you won the galactic lotto. The universe is on your side.
I always say that because I'm always saying people can make content, make videos, whatever. It's one thing. But if you could be a full-time streamer, could you actually do that? Because the effort behind the scenes you don't see. So every time someone comes on, I'm asking them about it. They go, it's actually really hard work. And people see the effort it takes. People can really appreciate that. Because like, if you talk about, you started in 2010, you say, properly, let's say. But
Sure.
like,
But I was doing stuff for 10 years before that.
Yeah, so you've got this lineage of time where like you can have experiences that have led to this point. But looking back on that, what are the challenges that there are now that weren't back then and vice versa? Because content's changed a lot, right?
I mean, I wouldn't know how to start now. I think a lot of people ask me frequently, Jesse, what would the strategy you'd use today to become successful? Y'all, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I think that the current situation right now is that when I started, I literally asked, what is this and how would you make money in this? Because when I was doing it originally, I did it for fun. Like that first 10-year period when I did voices and I did animations and all sorts of stuff, that was just because, like, what if people watch this? And around 2010, 2011 is when it suddenly became about money. And I think when people realized it could be a job, attitudes changed drastically. And it was like, oh, okay, I want to be that. That is the job I want. I want to be a YouTuber. I want to be a streamer. When before, a streamer and YouTuber is something you did just because, like, I'm on the internet and people will talk to me. Now it's like, I could make some money doing this. And when that happens, there is an influx of people, especially young people who see that and they're like, oh, that's a job I could do. So now you have so many people in the space. When before there weren't. There were plenty, but not in the billions, like there are so many people streaming now. And getting discovered, I can't even imagine trying to do that. And being able to stay on top of content and chase that dragon of like everything needs to be new and we gotta. It's just a lot. And so I also, like, strategy wise, I am terrible at modern day algorithmic content creation. There are clearly things that you need to do now in order to play the game of what these websites want you to produce versus what I made this video, please watch, which back in the day was the way it was. I made a thing, please watch. And if people did, it was organic and people wanted to see that content. Now you gotta edit a certain way, have a thumbnail that looks a certain way. Your streaming lights need to be a certain, like, everything is someone somewhere mathed out the best way to do a thing.
And
And
I've said, sorry to cut you off, I've said many times, you go back to when YouTube first started, because I was there too, you had Evolution Advance, the gorilla video, and one other game video. That was it. So it was a lot easier to be viral. Whereas nowadays, it's easier to make content, yes, but it's so saturated that it's just a
Yes.
minefield of wherever it's a black hole essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, and in order to stand out, you really have to do like genuinely over the top things, right? Like there are many people who right now are like the popular streamers and stuff as an example. And I'm fascinated by watching the younger streamers grow because you can see when people, kind of like hit, I don't want to say adulthood because they're already adults, but like hit, I'm an adult now versus when you're a kid. And it's interesting because you can see their style change and their attitudes about streaming change. But then you also see people who don't ever change. And it's super interesting to watch them too, because it's like, yikes, dude, how are you like 38 and still doing like the Minecraft intro shtick? It's like, hey, gamers! I'm like, whoa. It always makes me laugh, but everyone's got their thing. So, if it works, it works. But Yeah, it's a different beast today. And I wouldn't even know where to start or how to begin. But I would say there's no difference in how to become successful. Being successful, the real trick, this is absolutely true. I don't care what anyone says. The real trick to being successful is have a friend who's already successful. There you go. That's it. I know for a fact I wouldn't be where I am. I know my co-host on Geekenders Dodger wouldn't if it wasn't for John Bain being like, hey, come be on my podcast. That's it. That's the start of my career. Is an already popular person said, come join me. And I was like, okay. And all the exposure I got was through him. Even if I think a lot of I'm like, my content's great. I love this. I love this. Doesn't matter. If people aren't watching it, it doesn't matter. So absolutely exposure is through him. And I think if you look at all the people who are popular, they got popular because someone big invited them on a show or did a thing with them. So, organic popularity is rare. And if you got that, awesome. Awesome. But most stuff is who you know and how that, can help you grow. That's really it. I wish it was more like, here's the strategy. It's like, no. It's all place and time.
There's also I guess, a little bit of devil's advocate from my point of view is if you've got this, like the thing now where it's so saturated, there's so many people that I see that are viral, quote unquote, that I don't even know of, right? Because there's so many now little communities of spaces, Twitch streamers on YouTube, whatever it is. They've got their own little community and they're really successful, but I've still never heard of them. Whereas that never happened back in the day. So just because viral is like one thing or popularity is another thing, doesn't mean I'm going to know who they are. But there's still, do you see what I'm trying to say? There is that kind of balance there now, I
Yeah,
think.
well, I mean, I think I've always seen streaming and this sort of content creation thing as you're basically a busker. You're on the street corner, entertaining, hoping some tips are thrown your way. And yeah, you're not gonna know every busker. You're not gonna know every street corner, and that's fine. You don't need to. But if there's one person on the street corner you walk by every day and they're putting in the work and it's like, yo, you're doing well, then you might stop by and listen every once in a while. And I think, or like an author. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of authors out there who have amazing fandoms. And I guarantee you've heard exactly 0.01% of them. And that's entertainment. Your job isn't trying to entertain everyone. Your job is trying to entertain the people that like the thing that you do. And that's it. So focus on that. Just, if you have people that are like, hey, I'm here for you, this is great. Focus on them. Don't try to be like, how do I get everyone else? Don't do that. It'll dilute who you are as a brand, as a person, as a content creator. Just don't even try.
That's such a good analogy because it is literally that, I think. If you can be happy and we're in your lane, let's say, on your street corner even, you're going to attract more that are like you. And so that will just continue to grow. Let's get into your game a little bit though, because I'm curious. So first question I have is, linking it to your content creation stuff, has making content, especially as a career now, ever taken away your enjoyment of gaming?
Oh, it hasn't. It never will. I enjoy a good game at all times. The only thing it's taken away is my ability to enjoy 120-hour games. It's just because there's so much going on in a day that I don't have the time to sit down and just, yeah, I guess I'll get through this new RPG that's, gonna take me 2 months to beat. That's probably the worst thing, or like an open world game where now I've played so many open world games, I literally can't be asked to do it anymore. Where I just am like, yeah, okay, yeah, all right. Another game where I absolutely know I'm going to get lost exploring stuff. I'll be 100 hours in and realize I haven't even done one fourth of the game and I'll never beat it. So all right, that was fun and I'll move on. Other than that, I still enjoy it. I think if you don't, then why even bother? Right, it's like at its core, I started, and I think most people started gaming for fun as an escape from like a boring day or a job or whatever, and you just want to be entertained. It's entertainment. And the minute you enter into that, you would think, yeah, okay, it's my job, and I from 9 to 5 I game, and after that, I don't even want to see them. And That's fine. That's a fine approach. I've definitely been there sometimes. But I think if you don't like it, why engage with it? It'd be like if someone was into, I don't know, filmmaking and then started working as a director and then was like, oh, I hate movies. You know, like, no, your whole job is to love that thing and improve your craft. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of just sitting down and playing games. The big thing I think is people need to not always think they need to be online. Like streamers and content creators often feel that if they're going to play a thing, they must be streaming it or they must be making content on it or whatever. Sometimes, for example, Silksong, playing it on my own, I don't want anyone to have to be like, Jesse, you're doing it wrong. Or this is a tip I'd give you. Or wow, that like I don't want any feedback. I want to sit down at home with my PlayStation on my TV and just play it and shut out the world for a little bit. And maybe I'll play for an hour and be like, all right, well that you know, I boy, I sucked at that. All right. You know, but then I'll move on and do something else. Yeah, it doesn't always need to be filmed.
But that's why I think it makes people like yourself, because if you love it that much, it never does wane. Like I've made the point before about streaming. Like I don't think I could do it because I would be worried that I'd be too intense in the chat, or I wouldn't be able to intake the game that well, right? Especially a story game. But then someone tells me, actually, no, it might be the reverse. You might play it and enjoy it more because you're doing it with others. So there is, you know, just find your lane and stick to that. Okay, then your games, favorites, earliest ones, memories. What's Jesse into?
Well, when I was younger, I never really had so my parents wouldn't let me have a Nintendo. Not for any weird, like, you know, rot your brain reasons, but because my uncle had told them a Super Nintendo was coming, and they were not about to spend money on a Nintendo when a Super Nintendo, when I'd ask for the Super Nintendo next. So I had to wait years. So I'd just go over to friends' houses and hang out there and play their Nintendo games. But I never really connected with it. I'd be like, oh, this is fun. It wasn't until Super Nintendo came out and I got Mario World and I got a Super Scope. That was amazing. That was a big time for me. I liked playing the weird games like Joe and Mac. I enjoyed all the weird JRPGs that I never experienced before. That was really fun. But for the most part, when I was young, I think I owned a total of like five games because my parents weren't going to go and just buy me every game. But at the time, we had Blockbuster Video and other rental places where you go and rent a game. So I rented games every week. And it's interesting that we don't have that now. And now it's kind of like you buy a thing, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And it's interesting that we don't have a, I guess I'll try it. And let me tell you, there's a lot of Super Nintendo games that were total ass. And I got to try them and experience them and be like, all right, no, that sucked. I mean, even the consoles, when consoles would come out, Blockbuster would let you rent the console. So you could, like, that first week, rent a PlayStation and try it out. I remember I rented a Virtual Boy and I was like, yeah, thank God I didn't buy this. This was terrible. And having that experience let me ex play all sorts of games. But with that said, the games that really affected me when I was younger obviously were Final Fantasy VI is one of my favorite games of all time. I love it. It is so well done. And then during that time, because I never really had a PlayStation, I did go to shout to Myers in Ohio. I would go into it's kind of like a Walmart. I would go into it and in the video game section, literally sit there and watch as my parents shopped, watch the Final Fantasy VII trailer over and over. Like, wow, this is the future. Loved it, but I never had a PlayStation until I was much older, like in high school, and that was one of those I bought it with my own work money kind of things. But yeah, I had my Super Nintendo, and then my parents had a computer, and so on that computer, my uncle, who was like, I don't even know, the guy who knew about games, was like, "Hey, there's this thing called Warcraft. It's pretty nifty." So I tried Warcraft, and I loved it. And so yeah, for when I went off to college, the things I had with me at the time that were still my nerdy like things I loved. while also trying to get girls to definitely pay attention to me. Most of it, I was like, okay, that's my like nerdy corner. So I got, but everything else, I'm like super cool, ladies. That was a lie. But, you know, I, through college, I had my PlayStation and I had a computer. And on the computer, it was, I think the only game I had was StarCraft, I think. And on the PlayStation, I had, like, I'm trying to think of what games. I think I had Parasite Eve and maybe some other game, but I rented most things. Like, I had a whole scheme for renting JRPGs because it would be four discs. And I would try to figure out, all right, how can I keep one disc? Oh, well, if I return it, and then they call me a day later, where's the missing disc? I've got an extra day with that game. And I'd be like, oh, I left it in my thing. Oh, I'm sorry. And I'd drive the disc down and be like, I guess I could re-rent it, right? So that's I would definitely try to milk it as much as I could. But, yeah, I didn't have a lot during that time period. And then the minute I was out of the dorms and living in an apartment with friends during the rest of college, it was full-on game time. Counter-Strike, Final Fantasy XI, you know, EverQuest stuff. Doing, I'm sure there was a Call of Duty at the time or a Medal of Honor or something we were really into, that kind of stuff. And then from that point on, it was kind of like, okay, we're just all gonna be nerds in this apartment and you know, jump on. I'm trying to think, it was like ICQ or Ventrilo or whatever it was at the time, and then we just nerd out and play those games. But yeah, like that's kind of my flow of gaming that I love. But for the most part, it was Final Fantasy and like Blizzard products.
What I love is that every single person, no matter their history or back, whatever, there's always that's one person in your family, like one friend you've got in your friend group, but just knows stuff. Just they're yeah. The guy or the girl. They're the one that knows.
I have no idea how he knew. Yeah. The man, he's not even like a gamer. He's just, he owns a like clothing shop. Like, I don't know what the, like, I'm like, what is this guy? What's his vibe? He just knew everything. And
We literally had that. We had a guy, I played football or soccer, and there's a guy that did our team kit sponsor, and he was a foreign fella, but he had this massive like kit make shop. But he used to have a lot of chipped PS1s just for some reason. And we're like, how have you done that? Oh, I know a guy. So this isn't shady, is it? But everyone knows a guy. So, sure.
Yeah. It was very strange. My uncle was the guy who I remember going to his work, and he had a computer in the back office. And on that computer is where I discovered Warcraft. Like, just at his, like, he had thought that was pretty funny that he was just playing Warcraft there. But also, I remember being very young, and he had a Nintendo. And God, I don't even know how old I was. I might have been 6 or 7. I'm going to say younger because I want to seem like a tough guy. But really, when I was a kid, my uncle had Castlevania 2 for Nintendo. And every time it would be a terrible night for a curse, I would get genuinely scared. I remember sleeping in his living room when I was staying with him for like a week or whatever. And every night we'd play that. And by we, I mean he'd play that. And I'd watch and be like, wow. But then when he'd leave to go to bed and I was still in the living room where I just watched a terrible night for a curse, little Jesse was terrified. I would stay awake like, the zombies are coming. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's definitely been a part of my life for a while.
I've had those. A friend of my grandparents had Resi 1, and I've weeks of no sleep because it's just one of those things. Yeah. Finish this bit off real quick with what you plan day to day.
Man, on a
you have time day to day?
Yeah. So, like, basically, I try to get to the office when everyone else gets here so we can, like, figure out what we're doing. And then based on that, I'm like, okay, what do I need to get done for the day? And I'll try to get through all the office-y things I need to do. And then when that's done, then I'll go through and be like, all right, well, what do I need to do content-wise? And then when that's done, I'll be like, okay, well, what do I need to do maintenance-wise? And then when that's done, I'm like, okay, now do I want to stream? Do I want to do whatever? And sometimes going through all that, I might show up on a Monday and might not be able to stream till Thursday.
It always fascinates me how people have their schedules, because I mean, obviously adulthood is one thing, but people that are involved in content or in gaming in some fashion, even they struggle. And that just fascinates me. I don't know why.
Well, it's interesting that there's like a joke, but it's very real. But there's like a joke in sort of content creation where most people, and I don't want to put anyone on blast because even my friends do this, which I do this sometimes. If you send an email to a content creator, don't expect a reply right away. Like most people will see it, be like, okay, I'll get back. I'll get to that later. And then 2 weeks will go by and they'll be like, oh, I should have responded to that. And that's just the thing I think is related to the amount of time and energy you have to put into constantly being online, having a presence. The job isn't just I show up and I stream. With that said, I am one of those people when people say, oh, it's very hard, it's hard work. Like, it takes time for sure. And it's tedious, true. But like, you're also not mining coal. Or, you know, being as a teacher, the degree of difficulty compared to being a streamer. If someone said, would you ever become a teacher again? I would rather walk into the ocean and let the tide take me. Like, that is, you're out of your mind. Streaming is, yeah, it's work. And people shouldn't view it as not work, especially if you want to be successful. But also, like, on the scale of work, it's pretty great. And if you're not thankful for it, I don't know what you're doing.
Listen, man, you said about your useless degree earlier. I did sports coaching. I'm a sports coach. I've been told to work in secondary schools for years. No, thank you. I don't want any part of that at all.
I will say, when I went looking for jobs in schools, all of them, every single one was basically, we're looking for a coach who then could teach history.
Yeah.
Rather than a history teacher. Yeah. So you would have been so much better off than me.
Okay. I've got so many questions to ask later, so we'll get into those later. But let's move on to the next bit. So for those who don't know, we do hot takes and solid debates. We do coaches questions and create a spotlight. So in hot takes, solid debates, as it sounds, have you, Jesse, got any hot takes that are gaming related?
Ooh. Do I have any hot takes that are gaming related? I'm sure I do. I don't know what they would be.
I can give you some to spur the moment if you like. I like the guests.
Yeah. Please do.
Okay, so these are some of the more famous ones we've had on the podcast in the past, I guess. So okay. Pokemon needs a horror game.
That's you know what? I don't know if that's a hot take or the realest thing I've ever heard. I love that.
It's already horror anyway. The more you think about it,
absolutely correct. The more you think about how that society operates, they've anthropomorphized the boy, that's a word, all of these little cuties, but they definitely eat them though. Like those are animals that you are eating those little cuties. Like, let's be clear.
I've just said, if you go anywhere and you walk around the corner and see a Jigglypuff just sat there, it is going to scare the bejesus out, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not great.
Yes.
Like it just is. And that's meant to be lovely. I've said before, I won't go to a massive diatribe, but so you know, I've said the Pokemon's 30 years old, essentially. And it's been the same, apart from, you know, your Arceus, your Goes, there's different kinds of the types of Pokemon Stadium, but they're all essentially the same thing. Give me a horror game. It needs something new. What if style? Give me something new.
Sure.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
I am. Some Star Wars.
Okay.
I'm a fan of Star Wars in that I can enjoy it and not get too insane about when it's bad.
So you're one of the good fans that are actually quite nice about it. I've said before that the strength of the Star Wars fandom as an entity is stronger, and stronger resolve, stronger entity than the strength of the actual movies. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're pretty accurate. I think for the most part, even in the original trilogy, Return of the Jedi is fine, but it's not like a great, if you're looking at maybe like film standards, as a kid, I loved it. I liked the fights. I thought it was neat, but like as a standalone film, the pacing is insane. Like it's one of the craziest, like they have to end it clearly, but also it's a wild, it's barely has the structure of a movie. It just plows forward with, we have to get to the end. And, you know, comparing that to Empire, which is almost perfect. The prequels, some of it's great and some of it is like, what are you doing? And the sequels are a complete mess. I think they were just like, let's make something rather than actually have a 3-movie strategy, which, Yeah, and that's fine. You're allowed to be all over the place on those. But yeah, the fandom is clearly the thing. But I think that's the case in most long-term media. Like, I would say the exact same statement could be used for World of Warcraft. Like, World of
I guess
Warcraft
so.
is all over the place, but the fandom is what keeps it going.
Keeps it going is one thing, but actually dogging on it and being, dare I say, toxic
The
is
fandom of,
different
I mean,
entirely.
like, most fandoms are that.
Yeah,
Doesn't
true.
matter, what it is. At some point, you're going to have people who are a little too close to the material, and they get like a little worked up. And I think that's everyone. There's just some people that are not ready for prime time, and it's all right. You know, it's all right. So wait, are you saying hot takes? So I thought you meant game related. If you
Yeah,
mean
because
all
I've gotten
media
adjacent to
related
that.
hot takes,
Yeah,
I have
because
a hot take.
absolutely anything. Because just a really quick follow on from that was going to be,
Sure.
so I've said the Star Wars fans are stronger as an entity than the movies are. I also think the games are better than the movies as entities.
Some of them. I think there are some that are incredibly good. And then I am always mentally back at Super Star Wars and how much I hate that game. So, like, you know,
And Bombard Racing, just put it out
Honestly, the arcade games always rocked. The one where you were a pod racer, the one where you were in the TIE fighter, like those were always fun. Or the one where you could, you know, duel Darth Vader, that was cool. I mean, for the most part, the games are very fun, but you know, I can't remember the name of the first one. I know there's Star Wars Rebellion, and there's Star Wars something else. They're both kind of like 4X-y games. One is fantastic, one is busted and broken. And you know, we get that across the board. I feel like that's the case with most big media like that. When you start getting into the expanded universe of everything, you're gonna have hits, you're gonna have misses, and you just have to accept that it'll be fine. I think the biggest problem with current Star Wars is that Disney was like, everything that exists is canon and thus is important and must be connected. And the problem is back in the old expanded universe of Star Wars, if you liked it, you liked it. If you didn't, you didn't. And it didn't particularly matter overall. Because it was basically fanfic. It was fan fiction that was approved. And so it didn't particularly matter. Now, everything, you know, when they deleted all of that and restarted, everything had to be important. And so when something sucks, it still matters. And I think that rubs people the wrong way.
It's the because I like Star Wars. I'm not a massive fan of Star Wars generally, but it's the Rogue One argument or the Marvel argument. It's hard to stay connected when it isn't tighter. Rogue One for me is the best movie for me personally because it's a tight-knit story. Whereas like you said there, because everything else feels like it needs to be canon or needs to be part of the same lexicon. It doesn't make it appealing to me as much. So I get where you come from.
It also raises questions. Like a great example, without spoiling too much for those who haven't seen any of it, in the Ahsoka show, for example, they bring back a fan favorite villain from all of Star Wars Expanded Universe. And he's like, oh, this guy's trouble. This guy is one of the greatest threats to the galaxy. But because the timeline and what it takes place in, essentially, this villain who appears is in between the end of Return of the Jedi and the beginning of the boy, my brain just died. The first sequel movie, which I cannot remember, Force Awakens. It's in between that, but in Force Awakens, they make it seem like nothing really crazy happened. But canonically, now the one of the greatest threats to the galaxy has returned and needs to be dealt with. So either they somehow hold that plot for the 40 years or whatever until after return, you know, after the Rise of Skywalker, or they deal with it. Either way, it's like, okay, so really he's not a threat. You took this fan favorite character and minimized him by sticking him in between things, and no one has talked about him since. Like, no one was like, remember that time that, wow, that was crazy. Remember when that guy came back? Like, that really changed how we look at the galaxy. No. That's not at all what happens. And it's very interesting. And I have no idea how they're going to thread that needle. But it's one of those things where it's like, you did this to you. You're the problem.
I feel like we've done it. I feel like we've unearthed an opinion. So you had one pop up, did you? A hot take come up?
Oh, yeah, no. Here's my hot take. Since we're talking about like general stuff, fantasy hot take. Elves are boring. And I think we need to stop trying to make elves main characters. They're very good side characters who look through their perfection at humanity's flaws and can comment on it. But making an like making elves the main thing is boring because they're perfect. And the only way to make them less perfect is to make them like, I'm a sassy elf, or I'm an asshole elf, or I'm, you know, like that kind of thing. And yeah, I just think elves are better as side characters. Same with like any fantasy creature, dwarf, whatever. It's fun to have them. They're very cool. I like the inclusion. But at the end of the day, unless you're playing like a D&D campaign where you're all like, we're friends and we're having a good time. If you're making a movie or a book or whatever, having an elf like POV main character is ridiculous. Unless you come at it from the angle of I don't understand anything that's happening. Why are these people eating meat? Why are like you died? That's crazy. I didn't even know that was a thing you could do. Like that, like there's gotta be a different way of approaching it. And I think most elf stories are kind of boring. That's my hot take.
So you weren't an elf in Baldur's Gate 3?
I was not. I was a dark urge, and it was the greatest story I've ever had in my entire life. I rejected it. I played Jesse the Good, and I was a dark urge. And so I was a paladin who the game kept trying to make me do evil, and I refused to do evil. And it was maybe the single best experience in a game I've ever had. I loved it from start to finish. It was fantastic.
I'm so glad that we've gone to Baldur's Gate somehow because I love Baldur's Gate so much. It's an experience that I've had most recently, which is so rare, which is you get like an hour a day, right? Because everyone works, everyone's going. The fact that it's so big in Baldur's Gate, once you get to a certain point, is the selling point for me. Normally, it's like, oh, it's 100-hour gaming. I'm never going to finish it. I won't play it, whatever. But the fact it's that big, because it has so many endless options, jump on for an hour, do some random stuff, any direction you can go in, there's no right or wrong. Made it so appealing, and I'm glad you mentioned it. But elves, what was the turning point?
I don't know. I just think in general, when it comes to most media, I think a lot of people like fantasy creatures and they like the idea of, you know, including them in their story or whatever, and that's fine. But I think the minute it becomes that's my main character is Morgor the Orc. Like, okay, cool. That's great. You now need to set up so much stuff for us to understand orc culture without it becoming a caricature. Like, oh, that's just a human, but he's green. You know what I mean? Like, you're not setting up a real lore for your people. You're just making a green human. And it's like, well, why do that then? That's lazy. And so I think, yeah, you know, I think when it comes to, you know, like Warhammer 40K as a great example of its popularity. All the crazy races, all the different people, exist sort of around this human center. And the humanity in the center and the weird sort of death culty humans in that game are, you know, are the main focal point because there's so many, you know, you have like the 80,000 chapters of this or this, and you have all these different factions, but it's mostly human centered. And then you have all the Xenos races around it. And they are hilarious and fun and amazing. They have their own lore, but rarely is it from their POV. It's mostly humans interacting with all of them. And every once in a while, we'll get a character from one of those factions to show up, or we'll get a backstory or a lore. But really, it's this sort of human core. And then you have all these other creatures on the outside. And I think that's probably the way to do most things, is it's, you know, we need someone who's our POV in a fantasy world. You can't make a fantasy universe and just not have someone ask the question of like, why is this the way it is? And what happens here? And who are you? And what is, because you have to be able to, you know, learn things as you experience a story. And so yeah, we need someone to represent the reader and or watcher.
Dare I say that your degree comes in handy here because you can approach storytelling and speaking, essentially, because you've got that back knowledge of it from your degree?
I mean, I want to say yes, but also I'm entirely open to someone showing up and being like in the comments or whatever, someone's like, wrong, Jesse. This is why elves rule. This is why you're incorrect. And if I read it and I'm like, oh, touche, you got me, I'm fine with that. I'm okay being proven wrong. It's, you know, it's a hot take, not like, oh, this is the hill I'll die on. I just, elves, oh, they're the worst. Like, I don't, at the end of the day, I don't particularly care, but it is one of those things where I'm like, this is how I feel. I'm open to feeling different.
And let's get into more of those feelings then. So let's get into coaches' questions. So for those who don't know, coaches' questions, I do plan them, promise, questions on my page, and we post them to the viewers. Now, question one is, what is something that gaming is missing? We try and ask different questions here, Jesse, just to be a bit of an interesting, you know.
Yeah. I think currently what gaming is missing is artistic freedom. When it comes to AAA games, I think a lot of people feel beholden to what is the general thing that will sell us the most copies. What kind of game should we make? And so a lot of AAA titles are starting to get a little samey, while indies, on the other hand, who are beholden to no one, are pushing the limits more and more and more and more and more. And I think if AAA games actually did what indie games are doing, we could have some like really amazing experiences, because there's real money there behind them that would allow people to try different things. But because there's real money, no one wants to take the gamble. So I understand it, but that's what I would say. I think we're missing letting the devs create rather than a bunch of dudes in a boardroom determine what it's going to be.
Can you see that ever reverting back to type, or are we stuck in a loop now of money talks and that's where we're going to stay?
That's a solid question. I feel like that's the case in all of entertainment right now, be it movies or whatever, that there's a lot of choices coming from executives, especially as more and more companies become one company, as more media companies are bought up by the same companies and they all start to fall under one umbrella. There's a reason why Star Wars and Marvel started to feel samey, right? Disney bought them up and was like, okay, we're going to pump out content. And after a while, it became like, oh no, I'm just trying to keep up with the amount of stuff you're making. Rather than, honestly, Disney has sort of a content creator approach, which I'll never forget this as long as I live. I heard this from a talent manager who managed a bunch of TikTokers when TikTok was just starting. And he said, it's not about what content you create. It's about constantly creating it, because you may have 10 videos that no one watches, but if you, out of those 10, one blows up, that's new people watching you. And if you keep doing that and you get another one that explodes, then that's more people. So you just keep making stuff and post every day at like 9 a.m., for example, and just keep doing it. And eventually you will find success. That's how it works. And that's kind of the vibe I get from Disney, where they're just like, pump out content. One of them will be a hit. Keep going. And thankfully, I feel like we got to the point where they realized, oh no, this is unsustainable. So I'm hoping for a better future. But I think right now, for the most part, big media organizations are like, I'm only thinking towards next quarter. How much money can we make right now? Rather than, will us producing mid crap piss people off? And that's how video games are right now a lot of the time. That's how almost all media is at the moment. It's like, we need to keep making stuff to get people to still be subscribed to our service or whatever. And it doesn't matter if it's good, as long as it's something new. And that, I think, is a problem.
Is there a part of a curve coming potentially whereby, so obviously, like you said, you've got these big conglomerate things that are like taking over the industries, and they're monopolizing it in many senses. But does it get back to the point we made earlier, where it's so, there's so much options now to make content and make media from like the general public or whatever, that indie spaces will just continue to grow, and you'll get more Phasmos, you'll get more Among Uses from smaller 5-person teams, because the heart of gaming is still there. So they'll still be popular from people. Is that the thing that will be sustainable, do you think? Or is it just they'll get eaten up too?
I mean, I would say double A game companies in that space, indies. Yeah, that's where all the creativity is going to come from. That's where people want to look at. With that said, the minute you become very successful, a bigger company will buy you. And anyone with half a brain is going to be like, oh, you're going to pay me $500 million for my company? Sure, take it. You know? So I understand why you would very quickly be like, oh, you, yeah, all right, sure. Have fun with my IP. I'm going to go make something else on my own. But yeah, I think that's where the creativity comes from. But I also understand that, yeah, once there's success, people will immediately get involved. And I think you can see that all over the place. Every time there's a massive hit, there are very few people that when they become successful with their game, stick to just that. Like, oh no, I'm gonna make a sequel. I don't want anything. I don't need you to buy me. I don't want your help. I'm gonna do my own thing. And yeah, it may take a Toby Fox length of time to produce a game, but that's on me and that's what I want to do, rather than, oh, you want to build out my company. A great example is Expedition 33. They just finished. Their game was a massive success. And when asked what comes next, they were like, we're gonna stick with our team. We're not gonna expand too much. We're gonna do our thing. And I guarantee you there are tons of people hitting them up like, work on this. How do we do this? Fix this. I wouldn't be surprised if every RPG manufacturing, any, you know, Squaresoft and Namco and all these, I'm sure they were just like, hey, do you want to work on our next game? And I would say the Expedition team was like, we're going to do our thing. We're fine. We're okay. Don't worry about it. I think we need more of that. We need smaller teams working with a focused goal, rather than we hired 500 people and it cost $800 million to make this game, so we have to sell 500 million copies. You're like, that's insane. The expectations are insane for what, like, not every game needs to be Grand Theft Auto 6, but that's the way you sell it when you're a big company, because that's how you get investors and people like, the next game is going to cost us $500 million. We have, you know, 800 people working on it. It's taken 6 years. It's the great. You want that, because then people on the outside see it and go, damn, that's huge. This is going to be so successful because think of all the money put into it. And it's a massive flaw. We spend way too much on games.
And speaking of size, what is a minor thing in a video game that really bugs you?
I would say unintuitive and or obtuse AI. Or not AI, UI. I need people to keep their UI modern, which means simple, but easily understandable. There are many games where the UI, you're just like, what? How many screens do I have to go through to find this thing that I'm looking for? I should be able to just press a button and get there. If you have a game where there's something important, it should be easily accessible rather than me have to scroll through a bunch of crap to find the thing I'm looking for. Ease of use UI is a big sticking point for me.
I'm going to leave that to marinate because I want to move on to the next one. What was the last one? What was the last game you bought based solely on box art?
On box art? That would be years ago. Because I haven't bought anything that wasn't digital for some time, which, yeah. I mean, I've bought in collector's things and stuff in the past, based solely on box art.
It takes you back, doesn't it? Because it's a long time ago.
It would have to no, this is easy. This is the simplest answer ever. When PlayStation 2 launched, which again, long time ago, when PlayStation 2 launched, I went to the midnight release at some store with my friends. And I remember getting in there, and all I was thinking about was the PlayStation, right? It didn't occur to me that I needed a video game. And so I was like, well, what am I going to buy? And I looked at the options that were available at launch for PlayStation 2. And I think one was a racing game, and maybe one was like maybe it was a football game. I don't know what it was. But I remember the only one that I was interested in was based solely on the box art, was Dynasty Warriors 2. And since that day, I've been a hardcore Dynasty Warriors fan. I buy all the games. And that was solely a box art purchase. After that, I think after that period is when everything on the internet started to really blow up. Because I think that was 2001, maybe 2000, something like that. And so after that, then, you know, you would see a lot more stuff online about games and what they were. But during that PlayStation 2 launch, that's when I was like, this is the game for me. Had no context for it. Didn't know anything about it. Flipped it over, looked at the back, and it was like, kill 1,000 guys. I was like, yo. And that got me.
I had that with Way Out of Samurai 3 on PS3.
Sure.
Because, I mean, that was 6 months ago, because I didn't have a PS3 out that late. But, like, that thing's missing to me. The ability to miss is missing in gaming, because you have everything at your fingertips. Everything is online. Everything is thrown in your face with a review or some sort of demo, whatever it is. And so to have that box art feeling is a missing piece of the puzzle for me. So I'm always interested to see what people say. Is there a part of gaming you've got zero interest in?
Oh, mobile gaming. I don't play it. I don't care. It's not even about like gotcha. I if you want to spend money on the game, like, I'm not going to stop you. I don't care. With that said, I just don't, you know, I don't use my phone much. It just kind of exists. And most of the things on there are like, well, I got to get into my apartment somehow. You know, like, I don't spend much time just on my phone looking at stuff. I'm not like a mobile gamer, and I just don't care. I've been told there are plenty of really great mobile games, and some of them, I'm a big like story gamer, so I like a good story. And I'm told there are some that have great stories. It's not what I do. If I'm gonna be stuck somewhere bored, I will literally just be bored. I won't just like pick out my phone and be like, what's going on? I'll just sit there and like look at people, listen to conversations like a creep. I'll watch, like, you know, people walk by. I'll sit there and drink a coffee and be like, yes, look at the world. I'm not a mobile gamer.
I can respect that. I would throw Chrono Trigger into the ring, just to put it out there. That's taken up a lot more time. Has a game ever gotten you through a tough time?
Oh, 100%. There are plenty of examples. I think the most recent example was at the end of 2020, when sort of COVID was raging and everyone was kind of stuck inside, I remember that's when a friend was like, hey, do you want to try Final Fantasy 14? I was like, I already played it. That game, it sucked. That was terrible. I didn't like that. And they were like, come on, just get, you know, we're bored. Nothing's going on. Do you want? I was like, all right, well, I got this level 40 character. I guess I'll just keep playing that. And then 5 years later, it is one of my favorite games. And it absolutely, I think I beat, and I don't want to spoil anything, a very emotional story moment, New Year's Eve 2020. And it was one of those, like, just perfectly timed, everything landed and hit right when I needed it most as, like, an emotional support game. Which I think a lot of people got from, like, Animal Crossing and some of those other games. They had that emotional support game where it was their cozy game. This was my epic story, sad ending game where I was like, oh Lord, they got me. And to this day, there's a video out there of me just teary-eyed, be like, it's so beautiful. That's definitely the last one that got me, which is why I think it holds such a special place in my heart. But also, I've been a Final Fantasy gamer for years, but that one, it like got me at the right time. And so that was definitely the last time I was like, okay, you know that. I think that would probably be it.
We have so many stories of people that have said, you know, I was going through bullying at school or a breakup, whatever it is, COVID even. And these games have got this power to just steer you through that course. I think it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the power of good media, good storytelling, is it, for the most part, should be there to, you know, I don't want to say guide, but like, it should be a thing that you take away with some kind of like, I learned a thing, either about myself or the world or whatever. Even if that wasn't the intention of the creator, it's you pulled something out of it that you can then take and incorporate into your life.
Last one before we go on to Create Spotlight. What is a game that you are just unashamedly elite at?
Oh, Joe and Mac for our Super Nintendo. It's a game where you play as two cavemen who have to save cave babes from dinosaurs and or other cavemen. And I am maybe the greatest player of that game ever. I can stomp that game without dying. I played it as a kid so many times. I have the boss fights permanently ingrained in my head. Yeah, you got to save the cave babes, dude.
I love it because there's so many games where people go, oh, no, I'm all right, but Mario Kart's always won. You can't claim that, I'm sorry. But these niche games that, oh, I'm sick of that. Medal of Honor, yeah. I'm sick of that. Halo, I'm great at it. And then you just can't really test that theory. So I just love the idea.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know when I'm not great at games. I'll never forget going to, they used to have a PlayStation Expo here in LA. And it was very cool. It'd be doing this summer. It would just be PlayStation stuff. But I remember one year I went with a bunch of my friends, and it was when Destiny 2, or maybe it was when Destiny, it was something was happening in Destiny. I don't remember what it was, but we all logged in to play at the event, and I realized I thought I was good. I thought I could do PvP well. My team we were stomping. We were doing amazing. And I was like, yeah, I'm so good at video games. And then when I looked at the score at the end, I realized that one of my friends was 33-0. And I was like 5-2. And I was like, I suck at games. And he was like basically carrying us, and I had no clue. That's when I realized, oh no, I'm not great at this. I'm mediocre at best. But yeah. It was one of those moments where you're like, ah, okay, right. I am not as good as I think I am at this. So yeah, I understand. I understand I'm not great at most games, but I'm average. I'm an intermediate gamer.
That's all you ever need to be.
Yeah.
So we move on to the last section, which is Creator Spotlight. Now, in this section, we tend to ask the guests to shout out the creators they really enjoy, or if not comfortable doing it, we don't need a name, that's fine. But just give us an idea, especially if someone in content creation, the type of content that you enjoy consuming and why you enjoy it.
Oh, I'm a big fan of content that is kind of like either really interesting essays on things that I have questions about. Shout out to people who just make videos for no one but themselves, and then I show up and watch them. So I, for example, recently, I don't know why I got it in my head. I think a conversation sparked this, but someone was talking about A Song of Ice and Fire. And we were talking about the books, and someone brought the question of like, well, all right, what's west of Westeros? I was like, I don't know. What? Let me look that up. And I went on YouTube, and there's like 85 videos. I was like, great, let's get an answer. And I just deep dived that. And that's the kind of stuff I love. But also I love, and even though I think a lot of people hate them, I love reaction videos. I think they're great. I love watching people react to things, and I'm really obsessed with people in their like late teens, early 20s reacting to things, because it's always so funny because they'll do things from the 90s, early 2000s. And in my mind, I'm thinking, how is this person reacting to the movie Lord of the Rings? Surely they've seen it. No, this kid's 20 years old. That movie is 24 years old. Like, they weren't even alive then. I'm like, oh no, I'm so old, and I fade to dust. But I love watching that. I also love people, you know, reacting to music. I think it's hilarious watching younger people react to Rage Against the Machine. They're like, what year is this from? The 90s? Nothing's changed. And I'm like, oh, now you see, foolish children. I love that. I'm a big fan. I will often watch friends play through stuff on stream that I'm like, oh, what are you? It's things that I wouldn't play. So, for example, I love watching Dark Souls or Elden Ring, that kind of stuff. I'm not patient enough to throw myself at a boss 85 times to beat it. However, I will watch a friend do that and enjoy the hell out of it. Same thing with Pokemon. The last time I played a Pokemon was probably Silver Gold back in the day. But I will watch my friends do Kaizo Ironmon runs all day. I love watching them repeatedly die. It is so much fun. So that's fine. I'll do that. Things that I normally wouldn't be interested in, I'll check out. Like, I will watch lore videos on games I'll never play. I could watch EVE Online videos all day. I'll never play it because that game is boring as hell to me. But when stuff pops off, it is the most interesting game in the world. You're like, wait a minute, this dude spent 3 years pretending to be someone else, and then he robbed an entire guild of all their money, and that translates to $85,000 in real-world cash? And I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like, this, it's better than some actual, like, game stories. And it's just people doing a thing. I'm all over the internet. I love all the different things people create.
So do the bit that I love, which no one else does, which is why it's my favorite. Why should someone be following you?
Oh, boy. That is a question I've asked numerous times. I would think that the reason would be because this guy isn't a character, and I've been the exact same for 24 years at this point. I'm not going to change. You're not going to get, like, a weird Jesse suddenly has some weird grift thing going on, or I just call myself Jess, by the way. I'm not going to end up being different. I'll be the person I am and will continue to be until they take me to the old YouTube folks home. But other than that, I'm still confused why anyone would want to watch, because I don't think I'm any different than anyone else creating content, and there's so much of it. But for the people who do, thanks.
I mean, for the record, the old folks home you'd be in would be the Hall of Fame, right? YouTube Hall of Fame?
I don't know about that. YouTube doesn't give a damn about me. I complain about them all the time. Admittedly, it's because I'm not like a I'm a working man's YouTuber. Like, it took me a long time to hit 1 million subscribers. I'm not like a highly successful, popular YouTuber. I'm a YouTuber who put in the time. And now, years later, I'm like, okay, yes. It's a great example of the whole thing. I have a golden joystick award. Just keep in mind, it was I started officially in the making money portion of content creation in 2010. But before that, I would make stuff all the time. I got an award in 2016 for up and coming YouTuber. That's my golden joystick. Like, it took 6 years for them to even be like, this guy's got something. So, like, just let that sink in for everyone who's like, I really want to see what content creation's like. It is a slog for almost everyone. There are very few people that are like, well, I guess I'm famous now. That does not happen. It is a rarity. And if it happens to you, you better thank everyone and your mama, because that is, you're the luckiest person who ever lived.
And so obviously we're in a spotlight portion, but speak about some of your friends. Who are you working with? Mention a bit of Dodger, maybe.
Throw some of it. My dear sweet Dodger, she and I do Geekenders together, and she streams frequently and now has a VTube avatar that makes her look like a mushroom for some insane reason. But, you know, let the girl do her thing. And then obviously my longtime collaborator, Krendor. We do Cox and Krendor together. Got to give him a shout out too. He continues to this day to still do his insane top 10 WoW lists, where he just shows off the literal stupidest things you've ever seen. I think I saw one that was like top 10 signs. That's the man, or like top 10 blades of grass. It really is truly non-content. And so give a shout out to him. And then obviously I feel like everyone that I work with on Chilluminati, Mathis, and Alex, that's fun. If you like podcasts about paranormal things and weird UFO-y stuff and conspiracies, that's that show. I am the one person on there who is like, well, that didn't happen. And they're like, no, it did, dude. I'm like, I don't think aliens took that guy. I'm just going to say it. I feel like he's making it up. Like, no. So that's that show. I there's so many people that I would happily say are amazing content creators, but for now I'll stick to the ones that I actively do stuff with on various podcasts. Right. Be here all day.
I think, well, on that point, That's great. You know, I've had a conversation before of like, shout out some of your favorite creators. Da, da, da. It's like, if you can't name them all, that's great because it means there's so many out there you could mention,
There's so many,
you know.
yeah.
And then going back onto your point about your journey and stuff like that, starting in 2010 to monetize stuff like that, but the journey before it, people that are listening to this, remember that because nowadays where it's so much more saturated, it is difficult. And like you said, if you're not going to get overnight success, you're going to be there for a long time. But enjoy that journey because success is different for everybody. So just take it as it comes. And I think
Also, yeah, the definition of success for me, I just wanted to get 1 million subscribers because that was like a benchmark. But that's not the definition. You don't need 1 million subscribers to make money doing YouTube. There are plenty of people that don't have even remotely close to there. They have such a like passionate fan base. They're doing great. Yeah, it should be about the creation process and making something. And instead of being worried about how many people viewed it, focus on the fact that people viewed it at all. And like, wow, I can't believe 1,000 people watched this video. If this was 100 years ago, you'd be blown away. 1,000 people, dude? Like, that'd be crazy. And I think everyone gets caught up in like, it wasn't 100,000 or it wasn't 85,000 or it wasn't 1 million. Like, that, you should just be happy anyone cares about what you're doing because there's so many other people doing it.
And you mentioned before that you said like the top 10 blades of grass, or whatever the content is, a lot of it speaks to the creator. Get behind the creator. If you're yourself, and that's even better. And you said that like they could do content about, I don't know, crochet or archery. As long as you're investing in the person, it makes a big difference, which epitomizes what you do. Because I think it'd be hard pressed for anybody to come along your content and say, he doesn't enjoy what he does. He doesn't sincerely care about it. He actually really enjoys this. And there's nothing easier to get behind than that. I think you should give yourself a bit of credit, obviously, because you do deserve it for many reasons. But you should give yourself credit because you've got this like following of people that understand that as well. And that's not always an easy thing to accomplish, get my words out.
The
So.
minute I give myself credit is the minute I become the worst human being. I know me. If the minute I'm not like, if I start being like, yeah, I'm actually quite good at this, I will be unbearable. You don't want that version of me. That's why I can't be rich. I'd be the worst person. I know I'd be easily corrupted. I just know who I am. I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's the downfall of me. I'd be like, yes, well, of course I'm wonderful. What do you mean? Yeah, no, I couldn't do it.
So if you never really sit down and say to yourself, I've accomplished something here, which I mean, you must do at some point, but what's your sort of next steps? Got any next goals, next plans?
Yeah, I'm always kind of moving on to the next. I think that's the big thing that I learned. I don't, complacency is kind of a death when it comes to content creation. If you hit a point where you're just doing the same thing over and over again, either your audience will get bored or you'll get bored. And so you always have to be moving forward and creating new things, whether it's in the content creation or it's doing other things outside of it. So for example, I'm doing a lot of game producing. And that is literally new games constantly happening that are new things. I've changed the content I've created over the years simply because the space changed. And I'm like, well, then fine, I'll do this thing that I want to do instead. Yeah, I think you constantly need to be adjusting and reflecting on what you're doing. But also, once something exists, there's no reason to be like, well, I'm going to focus on that thing for a while. Like, it's out. I'm moving on. I'm gonna do something else. And so I'm constantly doing that. And I think it doesn't give me enough time to sit there and reflect on things. I'm like, all right, next thing. We gotta do stuff. Just because I don't want to get caught focusing on like if I made a thing and then people said it sucked, I know me, I'd sit there and be like, it sucked. I suck. This is stupid. Why'd I do that? What? No, it's like, all right, you're only judged on how good the last thing was. So if I made a thing and it sucked, well, the next thing's got to be good. All right, well, let's make something good. So you can't get hung up on past stuff or else you will burn. It'll be the worst. I'm very obsessed. I know I was talking about COVID, but there was like during 2020, this rise of people making content, brand new, always, it was mostly younger people who were not in school, who were just making stuff, and they were like 17, 18, 19, 20. And watching them now in 2025, I'm obsessed with this one ASMR streamer. Not because I'm like into ASMR, but because I'm into watching her rise and meteoric fall. Like, it's so bizarre to say that, but she was very, very, she came out of nowhere, very, very popular, started making content, Every single ASMR video had like a million views, huge. And now all of our ASMR videos have like 85,000, which is great. That's amazing. But comparatively, it's a massive drop off. And I was watching being like, I understand completely. Eventually, she started making the same video over and over and over and over and over again. Not changing it up, not trying to switch up, just the same thing. And it almost felt like she burnt out making it. And she went from doing three videos a week to two videos a week to one video a week to one video every 8 days to one video whenever she got around to it. And I think that's one of those things that happens. And to watch it happen in real time, I'm obsessed with it because it's so, it like helps me readjust myself to be like, okay, I see what happens when you burn out, and watching it happen to someone else, you're like, ah, right. Okay. Don't get there. And I think that's the thing, is you just can't let yourself burn out. And if you feel it, do something else, change it up.
I think there's so much to unpack there. It's going to take me weeks, but it's amazing because it's that sort of mindset that people need to at least hear once, I think, because mm-hmm. I mentioned before about this podcast, you know, if I'm doing one a week, great. But if it becomes more than that, it'd be a struggle. And sure. You can't promise stuff you can't then deliver on. It just doesn't breed trust. It doesn't breed confidence or anything like that. So I think people can take a lot from that.
I think it's the number one failure in streaming is people will say, I'm going to do 5 episodes a week. And then when they can't deliver on that, they do 4 and then 3. And then they lose their audience because they made a promise at the beginning. This is something I guarantee I've done in the past, where you make a thing like, I'm going to do this. And then because of life, you just can't. So my biggest tip to anyone who's like, I want to start doing this, is start with what you can do. If you have a real ass job that you are working, that's your priority. Despite your desire to be a streamer or whatever, and that's the thing you're going to do in life, I will let you know, every full-time streamer I've known, except for one person, did it because they had no other option. Like, they went full-time because they just lost their job, or it was COVID, or there's something going on where they had the ability to. Like, there's a lot of people who are streamers, who are influencers, whatever, who are the children of, like, very wealthy people, so they don't have to work. And so they can just start going full-time. Most people are not that. Most people do it because they love it and they have a dream of like, what if it happens? But the reminder should be, if you have a job, it's your job and you have to pay the bills and you got to do stuff. So don't say like, hey, I'm going to stream now. I'm going to do it every night. You can't guarantee that. So in fact, the smart thing would be is to be like, all right, I'm going to designate these 2 nights, 3 nights, and I'll do it the exact same time those nights. And that's how you build from there. Because people will expect, oh, every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, that's when JoJo is going to be online to do video games at 7 p.m. And now you've established that, rather than I will be on every day. Like, you can set those boundaries. You can do that. And then if you have more free time, then you can build on that and grow. And be like, all right, now I do 6 days a week or whatever the hell it is you do. I think a lot of people saw Co Carnage as an example, who streamed every single day for X number of years and got so much recognition for that. And that's awesome. Good for him. That is also something I do not recommend for 99.9% of people on planet Earth, because that is insane. Like, Co just on a different level. I don't know. Like, in my mind, I'm like, you didn't take a vacation, you know? But then at the same time, there are people who are like, I went on vacation, but I brought my laptop and I streamed there. And I'm like, why? That's something I just won't do. If I leave, I leave. I'm like, I'm going to go experience the world. People just built differently. And so I wouldn't recommend trying to do that, the co-strat of like, I'm on every day for 3 years and I'm going to build my, like, no, don't do that. Please don't do that. That is so unhealthy. Take your time. It should be a hobby you love, and if it makes you money, great. If not, it's fine, because it's a hobby you love, and that's where you should start from.
This has been fabulous. There's so much to learn and take from there, and I can't thank you enough. We always do this, and as we finish these things off, is there anything you want to finish with?
Being kind costs you nothing. Treat people with respect. Don't be a dick. And it's the internet is filled with mean-spirited people. I'll tell a story that just happened to me a week ago that I haven't yet shared. I was going to save it for Geekenders, but I'll share it here. On an episode, I think it was like a short of Geekenders, this guy posted essentially a screed of very mean stuff. I'm gonna sanitize it, but it was essentially like, this sucks, you suck, I'm gonna mute you, I never want to see you again, how dare you use a woman to get views, by the way, my co-host, you know, whatever, but like, how dare you, you're what's wrong with the internet, and then just a bunch of other like really nasty things. Anyway, I was gonna go in on this dude, but then, because every once in a while I'm just like, you set me off, man. You set me off. I didn't want this to happen, but you got me. And I was about to go, and I was like, maybe this is like just a kid or someone going through it or like having a bad day. I don't know. So I click their profile, end up on their YouTube page. Usually on a YouTube page, it's just stuff they watch. And maybe I'll get a better idea of who this person is. Like, some people are just not good people, right? And you can like kind of tell based on what they watch. And so I went there and I went to go see what this guy's deal was. And I saw he had posted 3 videos. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And 2 were from years and years and years and years and years ago. But 1 was kind of recent. And the one that was kind of recent was him rating video game characters. Like doing one of those like S tier, B, A tier kind of things. And I clicked on the video because I was so curious. And my dude looked like the most mess of messes. Like, he was going through it. I felt bad. I was like, okay, this guy looks like he's having a time. But underneath, I saw the video had 60 views and 3 comments. I was like, oh, I can't. What are these comments? First 2 comments were kind of like, one was like, what is this? One was, where have you been? And the 3rd comment was someone being like, this is crap. This is low-hanging fruit. This is lazy content. You're terrible. I'm muting your channel. I never want to see you again. This is so stupid. You suck. And I realized in that moment, this dude with 60 views had the exact same type of comment I had from him on my video. And I was like, it doesn't matter who you are or what content you create. You're always going to have someone who just hates you for an insane reason that makes no sense to you and took the time to write a massive thing about you. And I was like, I'm not even going to try and figure out why this guy didn't like me. The big takeaway is the guy who made the 60 viewed video responded to that comment. And he was like, I don't even know who you are. I don't care what you have to say. And I was like, damn, dude, I'm going to take your advice. I don't know who you are. And I don't care what you have to say, guy. And so I just was like, all right, moving on. And I just didn't interact with that person. But it reminded me that it doesn't matter how big you are on the internet. You're always going to have someone tell you suck. And I'm sure if you have less people watching, it affects you more. But there's always going to be someone who just does not like you for whatever crazy reason they have. They don't even have to know you. Be like, nope, don't like this person. And that's fine. And so it was one of those, all right, yeah, I get it. Sometimes people will be mean, but doesn't mean I have to be.
You are a special breed, Jesse. You really, really are. And I think, people listening to this will take something from it. And I think what speaks volumes to me is just the general balance of thought you have, and your approach is so considered and yet entertaining. And so keep doing what you're doing. Don't ever change. Please don't.
Thanks.
And for the love of God, if someone hasn't followed you already, please go and do it. You've been episode 79. I'll catch everybody on the next one.